Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. Eddie Pence is doing a comedy show tonight. We're gonna jump right into it. I feel like this is gonna be battle of the radio voices, and you're gonna definitely win.
You got this.
No. Ever since I've known you, Jason, you have the radio voice. You have the radio personality, and you're gonna out radio me. But you know what? It's gonna be cool.
How do you out radio somebody?
You know what? You're doing it every time you speak, man. It's just you're damning me. I'm gonna give a little shout out to your wife because I've known each other since we were five.
Are you good?
That was for you, Steph. Anyways, Jason, how you been, man?
Good.
You know, in all these years, I knew you were from Florida, but I didn't know you were from St. Petersburg.
Are you about to blame me for something
Florida's done? No. I went to see St. Petersburg.
Because I haven't committed any crimes there.
No, it's where the Dalí Museum is, man.
Yeah,
that is like, he's my favorite artist.
Okay.
And you guys did such a great job.
I have not been to the new one since they did that years ago, and I haven't been back to check it out.
Dude, it's amazing.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorites. I've always had like prints of his,
right.
To see like so many originals of his. It was awesome.
I used to have the Temptation of St. Anthony. It had a huge...
Yeah.
I mean, it was a reprint, but that was...
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Doesn't matter. It's still...
That was my bachelor living room for a while.
Dude, you know, high five for that. Yes! But, I mean, you know, I have so much love for St. Petersburg just because that museum is there.
It's a cool place.
It's an amazing city.
And, well, it's funny. When I was growing up there, the joke was that's where people went to die. Because it was nothing but retirees. That's all it was. It was blue hairs.
Isn't that all of Florida?
People driving 10 miles an hour. You know, it's that's all it was. And now... It's gotten to the point where a lot of younger people are graduating and they're staying and they're opening these hip, you know, breweries and coffee shops.
Yeah, they're like gastropubs and good coffee shops.
It's
like you
know, any city in America now where it's like there's a hip neighborhood that's kind of happening there too.
I feel like it's like it's like how Venice Beach was maybe 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was like not like the hippest place to be.
Right.
And now it's like super hip because when I went there, like so many people were saying the same things because I was looking up where to go in St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
And you get these, you know, people that are just like, everybody does it on every city, even LA. It's like, I love this city, but people down it all the time.
Right.
But the amazing thing was when I went there, it was like one of my favorite parts of Florida. It's one of my favorite cities in Florida.
Well, the rest of it's kind of crappy.
Well,
I'm kidding.
No, I like Florida. I mean, the beaches, you guys have the best beaches. I mean,
yeah, I mean, Clearwater Beach right there is the number one beach
I
in
just
America.
Got voted.
Yeah.
Just got voted that.
And they've gotten that, you know, for several years. I mean, not every year, but and it's gorgeous. You know, people in California, when you meet them, they're like, oh, they rave about the beaches. If they've never been to a Florida beach, they don't know the difference.
Well, so you got the white sand.
White sand, it's warm.
Big.
Yeah.
They're big. They're
you don't
huge
have to
beaches.
Have worry about waves killing you every 5 seconds.
Right.
I mean, it's different. Yeah.
I did. I went swimming in a Florida beach recently, and I didn't realize that the stingrays would leap out of the water.
Yeah.
Like, that was a little bit freaky.
You have to do the shuffle when you get into the water.
Yeah,
shuffle your feet.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I was just seeing things flying out of the water. I'm like, that's not normal. I'm not used to that.
That is normal.
You're
there.
Like, of course. So let me ask you this. You grew up in St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
Were you born and raised there?
I was born and raised there. Lived there until I went to college. I went to Florida State in Tallahassee.
Hey, easy. We're going to put on the brakes. I want to know, like, what...
I'm just going to barrel through this. Let's wrap this up.
Florida State Jason got into... being in radio, being in the arts, like what was the thing, what was the catalyst that got you like wanting to be in radio?
You know, it's funny, it's not something I knew I wanted to do, but I think it was there for years because there was a format battle. There's a couple radio stations in Tampa that you know, one flip format, and they went head to head as two top 40s, and it was this just really exciting, you know, no rules. I mean, this one station came out of nowhere, and they didn't follow any of the rules, and they were crass, they were loud, and it was, they called themselves the Power Pig, and they went out and they just had all these inappropriate t-shirts. I mean, the stuff that you can't do today.
Right, right.
And we all loved it. We ate it up. And I just never thought that that's something I wanted to do until a few years later when I was in college and just happened to get a job at a station. I mean, I actually tried, it's kind of funny. I tried to call, you know, every station to get a job. And they all said the same thing. Like, well, why don't you get some, you know, experience at the college station?
You're like, how am I supposed to get experience if you don't hire
yeah,
me?
Yeah, you need to hire me. And I didn't want to get, you know, no offense to college stations, but I'm like, I want real life, you know, radio experience. Yeah. You know, the guys at the college station, they're just in there playing Dinosaur Jr. and they're not showering. And that's not me. So
Dinosaur Jr. That's it.
This is way back. And they, you know, no station would take me on. And finally, a guy brought me in, and it was the country station. I'm like, I'm not doing country at the time. I'm like, it's not my you know, genre of choice.
Right.
But yeah, they took me in. They're like, you know, we just basically they needed a guy to sit there on the weekend and at midnight change over to satellite, babysit for 6 hours, and then go back to automation at 6 a.m.
How did you get like motivated to do that at that hour?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a time when you there wasn't really internet.
Right.
This was like 96, you know, so it's not like you had social media to keep you entertained or you could FaceTime your friends.
Right.
I mean, you're sitting in a studio in the middle of nowhere by yourself.
You must have discovered a lot of country music.
Yeah, I developed an appreciation for it. And yeah. I think that helped me develop an appreciation for all kinds of music. It really helped me broaden my horizons because I was forced to kind of embrace the one format I didn't really, you know, I didn't choose that. It wasn't really my favorite. And I think it kind of opened my eyes and ears to different formats. And, you know, and it's one of those things where you're stuck in a position, you're sitting there for 6 hours every weekend, and you can either sleep or you can try and learn some stuff. So I'd sneak into the production studio and try to, you know, edit commercials. And I mean, it was all garbage, but,
well, that's how you, you know, get your feet wet.
That's how you cut your teeth. And yeah. You know, I did that for a couple of months. And then one day the program director calls me and he's like, I need a favor. And I'm like, he doesn't even know me. I'm like, why is he calling me?
You know, I'm the graveyard shift.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, they fired the morning guy and they're like, you know, we're going to have the co-host. She's going to do the show on her own. She doesn't know how to run the board. And, you know, a radio board, usually it's pretty involved.
Yeah, they don't have buttons like this.
Yeah, so, I mean, so that was my job. He's like, you know, you need to come in for the morning show and run the board. And then I turned into the morning co-host and just never looked back. I mean,
so did you like the energy of just doing it in the morning too? Because there's a definite vibe doing a show in the morning.
It's a different vibe. And that's a time when, you know, I was in my 20s, so I was probably still going out a lot. So you're rolling in at like 2 in the morning, and you got to be in the station at 4.
Oh, my God.
So we'd come in smelling like the night before, and I don't know how coherent we were, and it's amazing. We kept jobs like that, but that's, you know, that's definitely one of those things. It's a different energy. Like you said, a morning show, you come in, and it's just, there's so many moving parts. You got, you know, the traffic reports are coming in. You've got news that's breaking overnight.
You've got bits, too. I'm sure you've thought about bits here and there.
And a morning show, usually you have, you know, 2, 3, sometimes a lot more than that, people in the studio. And they're all trying to, you know, do their part, do their role. And you're editing phone calls. And this is a time when nothing was digital, really. I mean, we're editing phone calls on tape.
So you're doing it on the fly. You're pushing faders.
Oh, yeah. We had a reel-to-reel. We're like, you know, the wax pencil and the razor blade.
Dude.
And, yeah, it was...
That's crazy.
It's a different era, and it changed so fast.
You're like these radio kids today. They don't know shit.
Seriously, it changed overnight, and now it's you really have to, and it's kind of with any media now, any industry, you really have to stay on top of the changes because they happen so fast, whether it's radio or film or anything.
Did you have like a shtick or any kind of angle that you were like, okay, I want to go this direction?
Me personally? Yeah. You know, it's funny because when you're... when you're young and hungry and they just kind of throw you into something, they kind of give you your role. And when when they made me kind of the it wasn't necessarily the morning co-host at the time. He's like, run the board and I want you to, you know, kind of do traffic and help her out. And the program director, he's like, you know, I've come up with a couple of names for you. And I'm like, I don't want to be given some weird name. He gave me a choice. It was either General Gridlock
That's good. That's a good one, though.
Or like Johnny that. Speed.
Ooh, go with Johnny Speed.
And so that's the I was Johnny yeah, Speed, the traffic guy, and it was horrible. Because you have a name like that, and you start thinking, well, I have to put on some kind of voice for that. So I don't even know, you know, what that voice was back then. I mean, this is years ago, but it's something that I've probably got taped somewhere that I'm never going to listen to. It's just so bad.
Well, I mean, you know what? That's kind of like how you fall in love with it. Honestly, yeah. It's not like a lot of people that they ask me the same thing with music. It's like, oh, what's it like playing, you know, a big festival? And I'm like, that's not where you have to train yourself to love it.
Right.
It's when nobody's listening, you play those shows in front of nobody.
That's the hardest time.
And
yeah.
Those are the hardest times. And yeah. It's like, if you find the love there,
right.
Everything else is easy.
And
you know what I mean?
That's the same with the radio. I mean, if you're, you know, working on a commercial and you're in a production room, and sometimes, I mean, I there was one time I was doing nights in Indianapolis, so I'd get off the air about midnight, and, you know, I'd walk into the production room and I'd have all of these commercials that were assigned to me. So, you know, you're trying to get out of there. It's like you're in your 20s and you're like, I want to go hang out, go to the bars and party or whatever. And there you have 3 hours of production work you have to do first. So you really have to, you know, just kind of put your head down and do the work. And like you said, it's like that's where you develop the love, the passion for it. And you just, it doesn't get out of your system. Even if you remove yourself, I've had a lot of friends that have gone in and out of radio over the years, for different reasons. Sometimes you get blown out of a station
all the formats always change.
And
I hate that.
It's corporate. You have takeovers, and you, like, it just happened in Indy to a couple people I know where they lost their gig because, you know, a company comes in, they pick up a couple stations. They're like, we don't need half of you. And they blow you out. So it's not always your choice, but it never gets out of your system. I mean, it's in your blood, and that's why a lot of people, they just jump at the chance. It could be like a third of what they're making at their current job, but they'd take it in a heartbeat.
So how long were you in Florida? You know, you were in school, and then you said you went to Indianapolis. Did you do like a summer internship? Or
no, I was in Florida. I was in Tallahassee doing radio until about, I think it was about 2000. And then I got offered a job in Indy, and I had never even been to the Midwest. I'm like, I don't want to go to the Midwest. But a buddy I knew, he actually had interviewed me in Mississippi at one point, and I didn't get that gig, luckily.
You'd be a whole different person.
Well, now when I went to Mississippi and I did not,
you're like, these
I was fish out of water. Yeah, I'm like, I don't have a pickup truck. Yeah, I don't have the right flag. So I was lucky to dodge that one. But he called up after that and he's like, you know, I got this gig in Indianapolis. It was the night job. And I was like, all right, I've never been there. You know, I'll do it for a year and see what happens. I wound up staying there for about 5 years before I came out
here.
It's
a great city.
It's awesome. I mean, it's another city where it's like, you know, a lot of young people. It's very hip now. And the people there are, it's hard to describe if you've never met anyone from the Midwest. They're just the best salt of the earth people that you will ever meet.
Right.
And you're always like, what's this dude's angle? Or
Yeah, and they're just like nice.
Because out here, you know, people in LA, you're like, I don't know where they're coming from. But there you're like, wow, they can't be this nice.
Right.
And they are.
And they are.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's the nature of
right.
it. It's like, whoa, wait a minute.
I mean, they will drive 50 miles to pick up a stranger in the middle of the night. It's
like, yes.
Okay. I won't drive over the hill to go to your show. Sorry.
Were you still doing the same format? Were you doing country? Were you doing music, sports?
I did. When I went to Indy, I was on a top 40 there. And then that was about a year. And then I actually went to a station, which was probably my favorite, was an all 80 station.
Oh,
I did that for about 3 years.
That's your bag, dude.
I got paid to be on afternoon drive playing 80s music and just, you know, having fun with people calling into the station.
That's
I'm like,
crazy.
This is an actual job. I'm doing this for 4 hours a day. And then, of course, I'd get off the air and I do production and what they call radio imaging, where you're, you know, making the sweepers between the songs. But I could not believe I got paid for that. You know, you're playing stuff that you grew up with and you're just in the studio, you're like, this is real?
What was your, like, go-to? What was your go-to selection of 80s songs that you're like,
God,
man? Because you have to make blocks. I know you made blocks.
Well, it's funny because I got a lot of creative license doing afternoon drive there. I don't know why. I think the general manager just happened to like me there. And, I mean, I played stuff that was not, you know, I mean.
Like?
Personal favorite was probably Stripped by Adam Ant.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why.
You went deep.
I
like it.
Every Friday that song came out, I'm like, oh, I need a 4 minute. It just, you know, just happened to time out perfectly.
That's so crazy.
I don't know why. It's just that was always my.
So did you ever go like new wave? Did you go pop? Did you play all of that?
I think.
Were you selective? Because that's like, that was a very rich era in style. Like you had the hair bands.
Yeah.
You had like the new wave bands.
You know?
And then you had like the Michael Jackson, Madonna, like, you know, the pop star.
Well, that's what's funny about the 80s, because during the 80s, it didn't make sense to have all that together.
Right.
But if you have an 80s station now, or if you have, somebody plays an 80s playlist at a party, it makes sense together. You can go from Poison to New Order.
Because they're all new releases,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, it doesn't jar you. You're like, I'm used to this now. But back then, that's what's strange. Like, the 90s are still a tough era, because I was doing Top 40 in the 90s, and that was a hot mess.
Right.
I mean,
well, because it's like, those are fresh off.
But you got Usher and Celine Dion and Savage Garden and Backstreet. It didn't make any sense.
Right. You're like, this doesn't make, these aren't my people. The
80s. But I think in time, the 90s probably it'll be the same thing, because I think the further away you are from that, it just starts to kind of, I don't want to say it sounds the same, but it's a better flow, if that makes any sense. But,
well, I'm sure every generation's like, because I always fight this. I'm like, man, pop music today is just not hip.
Right.
It's not like the 80s, but I'm sure in the 80s people were like, oh, pop music today is not like the 60s.
Well, and today you have that millennial whoop in every song. Everything starts to sound the same, and I know we probably just sound like old guys.
No, definitely. I'm definitely an old guy. I actually look at the charts and I go, I don't know a single damn person on this chart.
And if you see the Chainsmokers, you can probably guess the three chords that are in that song every time. It's the same song.
Well, it's the same three chords in all 50 songs that are on the charts.
So that's, I know it's just like, I'm sure our parents said the same thing. You know, I remember in the 80s being dropped off at school and my parents are playing the 50 station, you know. And so what's weird about that is nowadays, like when I'm taking my kids to school, I have the 80 station on.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God.
You're that guy.
I'm a dad now, you know.
No, that's the way it is.
It's bizarre.
That's the circle of life.
Yeah. But at least my kids, you know, they have an appreciation for it. I mean, I'm you know. My daughter's really into Queen now.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, she just saw the movie. Yeah,
of course.
But there are, I mean, you know, I try to point out different genres for them, because I want them to know more than Post Malone, you know.
Right.
I don't need to hear Sunflower anymore.
No, it's so, you know, it's so, at least there are movies like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, in a lot of these animated movies, they're using, you know, old songs that we grew up with. And it's funny because, you know, my son's 7 and you'll play a song and be like, oh, that's from Inside Out, or that's from Despicable Me. And I'm like, no, that's Pink Floyd. Okay, sure. Fine.
You're like, let's have a little powwow right
as
now.
As long as he knows it. As long as they know the music and they have an appreciation for different genres, that's all that matters.
So how long were you in Indianapolis for?
Wow, it was about 5 winters too long.
You're like, I can't do this. And man, especially from Florida?
I went up there.
That's a crazy.
Well, I went up there in October, the year that I moved. And the first day I walked in, like, we had what they called the bullpen. So it's like this huge open area with all these cubicles. And so I had my own little cubicle with a phone or whatever. And I'm like, what the hell is that on my desk? And it was an ice scraper. And I'm like,
what is this?
I'm like, why do I need this? And they just laughed.
They're like, oh, you'll need it.
They were
hysterical.
They're like, just wait. Just wait a month. Just going from Florida to that, I mean, I was driving this old Jeep Cherokee and, I mean, I'd be parking on the street and it would freeze. Like if it rained or it was sleet or whatever, like it would freeze the tires to the pavement. And I'm like, I can't get to work.
And you have to exercise patience when you're in situations like that.
Yeah.
Like in LA, it's like you get pissed over rush hour, but when you're in weather like that,
oh, I know,
you just have to sit and warm your car.
There were days I'd get off the air at midnight and get in my car and have to scrape the inside of the windshield, because if you like leave the window cracked, all that condensation would just freeze up. And I'm like, this is bizarre.
So was that the reason you wanted to move to Los Angeles, or where did you move from there?
You know, I actually came out. My brother was out here for a little while. He was out here, you know, trying to be an actor. I mean, he's still acting, but he was out here doing that, pursuing that. And he's like, hey, I got this place and I got an extra room. And at the time, the 80s station, they flipped format and they went to contemporary Christian, and not really my bag. And, and even the GM was like, I don't really know if I can have you on that station. Cause it was a sarcastic ass on the 80s station. Right. So I'm like, yeah, that probably is not going to work for me. So I was just doing production full time, when he came out. So I was like, yeah, I'll come out and see what happens. And, you know, LA is a funny place, because you come out here and I've seen so many people just get eaten alive by the city. And it took me probably a full year to figure out, do I love it or do I hate it? You know,
it took me 30 years.
I mean, you're from here.
Seriously. And I'm not kidding. Either.
And there are days where I'm like, I'm not sure still.
Right.
But, you know, I got a great family, which like that's my constant.
Right.
Keeps me grounded. And it's I got a good group of friends. I got my squad that, you know, they keep me. There are times you're down.
That's everything. Yeah. Like LA, I tell people, it's like you have to search for your crew. And then once you find them, you're like, oh, this is great.
Right.
These are great people.
Because there are some crappy people out here, but there are some really amazing people too. Yeah.
But you have to search for them because the amazing people, right. they're not going to surface with the crappy people around. You know,
I just have to avoid Sunset Boulevard and that area. I went out there the other day. I'm walking down the street with Keaton, my son, and I'm just like, I am not trendy enough to walk down the street.
Yeah.
And that's a weird feeling.
No, but no, that's when you're like, you know, that's when you know you've become an Angelino. When there's no like glitter or flair on the Sunset Strip.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, this is cool. Or you go for like a cup of coffee.
Yeah,
you
know,
it's
I know.
Like you're not going to the whiskey or like.
Well, I remember when it first came out, I one of the first times I met you, you were doing a show at the House of Blues, right?
I miss that venue so much.
It's so weird that that's not there. I mean, know. You go down the street, I'm like, I don't even know where the hell I am.
I find that music venues are changing all the time, but that venue and that location, there was something about it that was just awesome.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's amazing that the whiskey is still there.
I know.
But the House of Blues is not.
Right.
They say they're going to move, but they haven't, you know, released the information when they're going to do it.
We're losing the Viper Room. Right. I mean, it's...
Oh, I didn't know about... Oh, yeah, because of all the hotels.
Well, there's a developer that's going to tear it down. And, that's right. Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of... I mean, it's a part of change.
But yeah.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
All right, so you came here. Did you want to pursue acting as well? Were you doing...
Yeah, actually, I did. I was like, I'm going to come out and focus on that because the radio thing... Radio is a strange... It's in a strange phase, and it's in a funk, and it's never really... I don't think radio has really figured out how to adapt with
oh, no.
the times.
No way.
Yeah. And, you know, you get in your car now, and we can either Bluetooth or Spotify, or we've got satellite or whatever. So it's one of those things where I'm like, how long is this industry going to be viable? And I think it is in some form or another. There's a lot of guys that have learned, that are inside, that have learned to adapt. But there are some guys that... You know, they're just doing their air shift, and it's like oblivious to everything going on around them.
Right.
It's changing so fast.
I think you have to be passionate. Like, I did Frosty, Heidi, and Frank's show when they were not on terrestrial radio.
Right.
And
yeah, they were doing their podcast,
right?
It was
at Frank's house.
Okay.
So we went to Frank's house, and we played, and, like, got this great camaraderie with them, and they had us play, like, their like, radio big annual year party, and then when they got on terrestrial radio... I called him and I was like, hey man, you know, we're playing Arroyo Seca. I'd love to come by. And they're like, yeah, great. And like seeing how their format changed, everything changed and they just adapted. But they were like, you know, there's some things that you give up.
Well, they have a lot of people to answer to now.
Right.
You know, they've got sponsors.
Or
and...
just, that's what I was just about to say. Yeah. In the middle of the interview, they'd be like, and there's this is brought to you by, you know, they just
the time is 7:40.
Yeah, they have to do that. So there's some things that you kind of give up, but. There's some things that you kind of open yourself to.
Right.
And you're seeing the game. Like, you were in the game when radio was kind of probably at its peak. I'd say in the 90s.
I may have come in later because I really think before me was probably its heyday. There was a lot more freedom. And I've always said, and I've been saying this up until today, it's like the thing with radio is its biggest advantage it has over streaming services or satellite, it's the personalities.
Right.
It's being local. And that's the mistake that I think radio has made for years now. They've consolidated. They've gotten rid of local air talent.
Right.
When you take somebody that's based in LA and put them on 400 stations across America, so now you have nobody in the studio while he's on in Atlanta. If something happens in Atlanta, what you got this guy that's voice tracked for 5 hours in drive time. You know. And that's the one thing radio has that it's not capitalizing on, and it's not grooming any new talent. To be the next Ryan Seacrest or be the next whoever, you know, there's no farm system.
Do you think, like, I think the art form itself suffers big time. But I also think, like, the fact that, you know, when, like, Rick Dees was a tastemaker in the 80s for LA radio, you know? There were so many VJs on MTV. They were tastemakers. It's like, you thought they were bringing this stuff to you. You know what I mean? And it didn't matter if anybody else was saying, oh, you need to play this, whatever. But there were a lot of people that actually were playing, you know, the music that they wanted.
Yeah.
Like Dewey Phillips, you know, from Memphis. That's how, like, the whole Elvis thing kind of came
right.
out with his brother doing Sun Studios and he doing radio. And he was playing, you know, like, African-American records when he shouldn't have been.
I mean,
there's something about tastemakers in radio that's totally lost.
Yeah, you don't have, as an air personality, you don't have control over any of that.
No,
you walk
that.
In and you have a paper log or it's on your screen. These are the songs that are coming up today on your show. And if you deviate from that, you don't have a job. I mean, that's the way it is now. And you also have a lot of corporate decisions on what gets added at the station. When I was a program director in Tallahassee for about a year and a half for Top 40, and once a week we had a conference call with the guy in Atlanta, and he was telling us what every Top 40 in that company was going to add for the week. And I'm like, well, Atlanta and Tallahassee are two very different
markets. Yeah.
So whatever you're playing there is not going to work here.
Right.
And they didn't understand that. And they still don't. A lot of these companies still don't get that. So you've lost that. You've lost the music. And really, these days, I don't think people, they don't get their music discovery from radio anymore, from terrestrial radio.
Right.
You know, personally, I'm a Spotify guy. I pay premium because I'm like, how many millions of songs can I get now?
Right.
So I think, if you've already lost music discovery on local radio, what do you have left? You have the personalities, or you have the promotions.
Well,
even
you have, like,
promotions are gone.
Like, I never thought I would love talk radio.
Yeah.
Like, even as a format to listen to. Like, I just never thought it would be something. And now I find myself listening to more talk radio.
You're getting old.
Yeah, that's how I know. No, but I mean, it's also like the stories or the interviews or, you know, my favorite is when it's an interview. It's like when you hear, as I hear stories, doesn't matter like what they do.
Right.
But if you find a story that's worth listening to, then it's just captivating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like now I feel like people are more into stories.
They are.
In a big way. But like it's a very finite, like, it's a very it's like a flimsy market for it. You know what I mean? Because there's so many podcasts. There's Sirius. I mean, you can scroll down.
Look at how it's exploded. I mean, even look at, like I said, Spotify. They've already committed to investing, I believe it's like $500 million this year on acquiring podcasting companies. They bought Anchor. They bought Gimlet. So they're going full force on podcasting. Which, I mean, who knows? I mean, it could go away in 5 years, but it doesn't look like it. It's blown up. I mean, look how many podcasts there are just about a movie review.
Right.
If you type in movie review podcast, it's just insane.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, this is, I'm very curious about this. Who do you listen to as far as podcasts or people that you're like, oh,
wow,
I love them as radio personalities? Or who was an influence?
Who was an influence?
Let's make it a two-part question.
Good God. That's
who was an influence when you were growing up as, oh my God, I want to do this? And who is somebody now that you listen to that's a, you know, a current colleague, essentially?
Right.
That you're inspired by.
Well, you know, growing up in St. Pete in Tampa, I mean, it was a huge Top 40 battle, and the big guy there was Mason Dixon. That was his name. He was the guy. And then when the Power Pig came on, his competitor, those guys got on the air and just did whatever the hell they wanted.
That's awesome.
And as a kid, you know, you're in high school and you ate that up. You're like, these guys aren't playing by the rules.
Right.
And so I think it's anyone that kind of doesn't fit in the box, that just does their own thing. You know, I don't always, there's a guy, Bubba the Love Sponge, who I used to like, and he's really kind of gone off the deep end since then. But I respect guys that are not trying to be exactly like Howard Stern, or they're not trying to be exactly like Ryan Seacrest. You know, you need to make your own
thing.
Way. Yeah.
That's how they got big.
Mm-hmm.
Star 98.7, Ryan Seacrest. I miss that radio station.
Yeah.
Because
it's a great
that
station.
Format, Lisa, I can't remember her last name, but it was Ryan and Lisa.
Ryan and Lisa, yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, that was a thing. But like now it's changed and it's done a disservice. Howard Stern still to me is like one of the best interviewers in the game. And it's like,
but he can do his own thing because he doesn't have a corporation saying you have to read the time and temp, and this is brought to you by 1-800-Flowers or whatever. And it's no one's fault that's on the air here now, or any city. You know, they have to play by the rules because there are so few jobs these days in radio. You know, if you don't want to play by the rules at your station, you got to find something else to do.
And were you also doing voiceover stuff while you were doing radio at the same time?
Yeah, you know, when I was working on the air, I mean, voiceover was pretty much you'd get off the air and you'd do commercials. So it's pretty much, I mean, there were even stations where I had to write the commercials. So
do you remember any of them? Come on, I know you do. Come on,
you know, it's funny.
Flex that muscle.
I got an award one time because, and this is kind of funny, it was one of those things where I was so pissed. I got off the air and I'm like, I had plans to go out, supposed to go to this bar or club or whatever, and they left me the spot. I'm like, are you kidding me? And it wasn't written, so I had to write the copy, I had to voice it, I had to produce it, and it was for some really, it was like some local vacation company or something. I'm like, this is so boring. So I wrote the spot, in the point of view of a suitcase. I'm like, hey, it's me, your suitcase. It's time for a it was so dumb.
That's all, man.
It won an award. I'm like, are you serious? Like, I got an award for like the Indiana Broadcasters or whatever because they submitted it. I didn't know they.
Well, it's inventive. I mean, it's like, you know.
But the irony was like, I was pissed off that I had to do this commercial and I had to stay late and it, you know.
But that, I bet you found some joy in doing it because of it.
Yeah. I mean, I've always loved the creative process. You know, it's about taking the most mundane thing that they give you and you're like, all right, how can I polish this? Because it sounds like crap, you know.
So, and now you're working with John Tesh. Tell us, like, you've been doing that for maybe.
I've been with John
decades,
about 14 years now.
14 years,
yeah,
that's right.
I do the voiceovers for him. I actually I write all the imaging and produce it. I'm the engineer of the show. And I'm the engineer and voice of both his show and his wife, Connie. She's got her own show too. They're both syndicated. It's great. I mean, talk about guys that have learned to adapt. They read the tea leaves, they see the writing on the wall, they know what's coming or they know how the industry's shifting, especially during the recession. I mean, when 2008 happened, advertisers were like, we have no money.
Right.
You know, so everyone's scrambling, people are losing jobs, but he's definitely one of those guys that he's business savvy and he kind of can adapt and do different things and come back and forth and it's been great. It's like it's bizarre to have any job anymore for 14 years, let alone a radio job. That is,
and you know what, a lot of people don't know, John Tesh, he wrote the theme song for the NBA.
He did,
correct?
Yeah.
And he was also the host for Entertainment Tonight for some time.
Yep.
And he also, didn't he have a show with Lisa Gibbons? It was John and Lisa. I think they did like a daytime show for a little bit.
I believe that's a little before.
And he's also a great musician. Like,
he's still doing.
Is he still tours?
Still tours. He does a lot of big band stuff, especially around the holidays. I mean, he's got like a full big band orchestra. Yeah, I mean, he's all over the place. And I never know what he's doing. I mean, there's some days he's like, I need help today. And it's like, so we're always kind of on call to help him out with the radio side because he's got his hands in everything.
Does he ever just go, hey, you remember that NBA theme song? That was me.
I want to say it just got picked up. I think he just licensed it to, I may get this wrong. It's maybe Fox College Sports.
Okay.
Yeah, so you might start hearing it again.
Wow.
Because it wasn't being used, you know, obviously it wasn't on, NBA wasn't on NBC anymore.
Dude,
so.
The 80s and 90s, and even the 2000s, like the early 2000s, that's all they played.
Yeah. Everybody knows that tune. And it's funny how many people don't know that that's him. I mean, it's...
Well, I think that's like, I always think a great writer is when they can disguise their work with something that everybody knew but didn't know it was them. You know, Justin Timberlake wrote the McDonald's theme. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. That's
really?
Justin Timberlake. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. So I think it's like, wow, that's great writing.
Yeah.
And you can be that marketable and nobody even knows. Then you're just collecting. You know?
Well, it's funny too, you know, any creative type that, because John tells a story. He I think he was touring somewhere in Europe and he just got this melody in his head. And this is back when we had answering machines. You know, we didn't have... And not smartphones or whatever. And I guess he called his house and kind of hummed it on his answer machine because he didn't want to forget the melody he got in his head while he was, you know, doing a show. But
that's amazing. That's how he wrote it?
To still be making money off that. I mean, that's impressive.
So when did you learn engineering? Was it just kind of like part of the process when you were doing it in Florida and Indianapolis?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've always run my own board doing radio. I love being more hands-on in the studio and controlling all that. Some people don't. Some people don't want to screw it up.
I like it. I don't love it. It's like one of those things where it's like if it's in front of a computer for music, I'm like, oh, I'm home.
Yeah.
But even with that, it's like if I have to do that and do recording like vocals or something, I don't want to.
Right.
You know, I just don't want to do it.
Yeah, doing music, that's a whole other ball game. I mean, you get Pro Tools with 39 tracks or whatever you're.
But see, that's where I feel at home. It's like so. It's like this. It's like oh, I have to learn this, and you know, this is mostly digital. You know, so like old school, like what the school you came from. It was like you had all the buttons on the soundboards.
Honestly, that doesn't even feel like that long ago to me. It's bizarre to be saying that that's changed so fast because I actually have tape at home. I have tape in boxes, reel to reel. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? I don't even have a reel-to-reel player anywhere. You know, I got to get this stuff off there.
It's making a comeback.
I know. It's just strange.
You know what? It's like one of those things that you have to release that because it's like your body at work too, you know?
I am not releasing that garbage.
Do you ever feel like you, because you had a radio show on LA Talk Radio too.
Yeah, we actually had a podcast, it was about 7 or 8 years ago. It's been
a
while.
And you played NK Band. High five
for
that.
I did.
You get an applause for that. Oh, our studio audience loves that. Yes. No, I listened to your show, I remember. And I was like,
that was fun.
And I was like, this guy's so good. You were, dude, honestly, when I listened to you on the radio, I was like, this guy's polished. Like,
no.
Even interviewing you, I'm like, this guy knows his way around radio. You just have that. You have it in you.
It's just doing it for years. And it's funny, when we started that podcast, it was me and another guy, Jeff.
Jeff.
You know Jeff. Yeah. And our friend Gina, who's also an actor. And we're like, let's just do, like, we called it LA Gen X because we're all in that same age range. And we're like, let's just do a show about trying to make it in Hollywood. Nobody's doing that, right? So it's, we got in a studio and we're like, let's just throw something together as kind of a demo. And we went in there and we started talking and we looked up and we're like, it's been an hour.
Right.
And we listened back to it. We're like, that sounds like it was a show.
Right.
And
well, that's
so
how
was,
you know you got something.
It was so natural so I'm sure you feel the same. Like, you guys have been doing this for, what, five years?
5 years, yeah.
That is impressive.
It's actually 5 years on this station, 6 years total.
Do you have any idea how hard that is? I mean, any kind of podcast. I mean, most people, 2 episodes, and they're like,
Well, you know what that thing is? It's too. I enjoy the spacing of an interview. Like when we first started, we used to do, I think we had 4 people that we interviewed in a 2-hour block, and it was just too hectic.
Yeah.
So when we changed to this network, we were like, you know, Eddie and I were like, you know, let's just have one person and just let that be the flow.
Right.
And it's, I love it because it's like you really get to, I've learned more about people in an hour that I've known for 20 years, like that I've made music with or been in a band with or, you know, been connected to in, you know, for high school, whatever it is, because it's like you don't interview your friends. And that's what the best part about doing this is, you learn, like, I love stories.
Right.
And, like, you know, you have such a fascinating story because you've been around radio. You've seen it change. You've seen the shifts. And it's like you're still working with, I mean, John Tesh is, he's a legend, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and you're still doing voiceover work.
Mm-hmm.
You're signed to Avalon Artists, right?
Right.
Do you still feel like there's another dimension of creativity that you still want to do that maybe you're not doing?
Oh, there's plenty.
Yeah, so
there's plenty.
Talk to me.
Well, you know, and part of that is, and I think a lot of people struggle with this, is it's fear and laziness. You know, you get comfortable in a thing. You're like, all right, I'm good at this. I'm making money doing this. So I'm just going to make sure I keep this, you know? And for me, it's always been this fear of like, if I do something that's not in my wheelhouse or that people don't know that I can do and I screw it up, I'm going to be embarrassed by that. And I've just always kind of struggled with like that fear of not necessarily failing, but almost fear of succeeding.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense.
And so, there's plenty of things I'd love to do. And it's also difficult too. When you start to, you know, you have a family and it's not that they're taking away from that. I want to spend time.
Oh, yeah.
We were still doing our podcast, and my son was born. He was the second.
And you don't want to be in your podcast.
I'm like, I don't want to burn my weekend doing this. I mean, I love you guys, but I want to hang out with the kids, you know. And so that's always a juggling act that we all go through. Steph goes through it too, where she's just plenty of things that she wants to do. But you know, when do you have the time?
Yeah, it's like one of the reason I ask that. It's like I feel like you would be a great late night talk show host. Like you just have that vibe. You've got the personality, you've got the radio, like knowing how to do it on radio is super difficult, and it trains you to do it on TV. It's like if you can do it on radio, you can do it on TV.
It's so funny. I don't know if you felt this way when you first started. When I first got into radio, I'm like, how hard can that be? And you get in there and they turn the microphone on and you're like,
I remember I was nervous.
I was too, but I thought I got this.
That's,
and the,
you know,
minute they the minute they turn it on, you're like,
yes.
You know?
Yeah. What do I fill the space?
Right.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I sound, nobody likes the way they sound usually. I mean, I hate the way I sound when I'm doing voiceover.
You got a great, you got a great radio voice.
It.
You do.
Stop it.
You do.
I'm not going to buy you dinner tonight.
That's okay. Maybe a back rub, but we'll see. Well, let me ask you this too. It's like when you didn't finish the question, you said,
I'm a politician.
Well, who are the people now in the game, podcasts? Maybe it's ESPN Sports. Maybe it's whatever it is. Who are you listening to where you're like, oh, man, this is captivating. This is what makes me love radio.
You know, one guy I like in terms of podcasting is Malcolm Gladwell. Mm. I don't know if he does revisionist
outliers.
History.
Outliers, yeah, man.
Yeah, Outliers. I mean, he just, the way he tells a story, like you're saying, and I'm really into that. It's the way you weave the story, the production value of it. I love that. I loved S-Town, the podcast, Shittown.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, of course.
It's just... And the way that you're like invested in some of these characters, and then something changes, and you're like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. It's the way they've laid out these stories is so compelling, and it's like if you're in the car, you pull over and you're like, I can't get out of the car until I finish this.
Right. That happens all the time.
I know I got to pick up my kid from school, but I got to finish this podcast or whatever. Yeah. So I like that type of podcast. In terms of radio, I really respect a buddy of mine, Orlando, who he's in Tampa, which I know that sounds weird. His name's Orlando, and he's in Tampa.
You're in the wrong city, buddy.
he programs a station there, and he does a morning show. And I've always, the way he does radio, it's like, it's so natural for him. Like, he gets in there and he just does it. And it doesn't sound like work, but I know that he's working his ass off. Right. I know that guy puts an 80 hours a week.
That's when you know, when they make it look easy.
Yeah, he makes it look so easy, and it's like... You're like, oh, you're not jealous of that, but you're like, man, I wish it was that easy, but it's not. He's actually putting in the work. It just sounds effortless. So I've always liked the work he does. I'm trying to think of.
Did you ever grow up with like Garrison Keillor?
No, I didn't listen to him.
So my dad's a huge Garrison Keillor fan. So like for me, listening, but he did movies too.
Right.
Listening to Garrison Keillor, the way he created stories and skits with voices and characters.
Yeah.
And like at first, my dad was listening to it, and I was like, "This is kind of corny. This is I don't know. Right. This is your generation." But then I started finding myself laughing, being captivated because he'd play a song, and then he would go into a joke, and it would be this like political satire. And those are the things about radio that I miss because nobody's really doing that kind of old timey kind of vibe where you really have characters in a room making a movie or making a skit or you know what I mean? It's like it's
lost like the old morning zoo format where you'd have like 10 people in there and there's characters and what, and some of that is, you know, it's consolidation, it's cutting people because of budgets, and you know, you got to have more commercials in the stop set or whatever. But I also wonder if a lot of it has to do with our attention spans changed.
Of course, absolutely.
I mean, we're like gnats now.
Yep.
You get in an elevator and you got to get on your Instagram to see if anything's happened.
Right.
And even after like six or seven of those posts, you're like, I'm bored. You know, we just cannot invest. And that's why it's kind of amazing that podcasting is doing so well, because you have to commit. You know, you're listening to some of these episodes, could be 40 minutes, it could be 2 hours. And I'm like, how are we doing that? We can't pay attention to our own kids, but we're listening to a show.
I love that you didn't say Marc Maron, because like everybody is... They jump on you know his ship, and I haven't, you know, it's like I listen to him, like, but I love Joe Rogan, I still love Howard Stern, I love This American Life, there's so many things like that where it's like it makes you realize this is a great time where there's so many opportunities for people to have a show or to have an angle or to interview somebody that you're dying to like listen to, and that's kind of like what made me, you know, get into this. Now that you're working with John Tesh, do you miss some of that? You know, that other side of radio, because like it's a different bag, right? Or is it? I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'm with a syndicated show, so it's, I'm not really involved on the creative side of it in terms of the content of the show. I mean, I did do some writing for the show at one point,
which is crazy to me because you're super creative to me.
Well, I am involved in the imaging. I'll write the imaging and voice it and produce it. So it's a different animal. It when you're dealing with a syndicated show like that, and you got to remember, if he's on 350 stations, that's 350 different types of cities.
Wow.
You could have a city like New York, you could have a city like Little Rock, and they are not the same.
Right.
So that's it's amazing how writers for any show that's syndicated like that, you really have to, you're straight down the middle. You know, you have to figure out how to talk to that person right down the middle, because you can't talk to, you know, someone in California the way you talk to somebody in Florida.
What's the biggest obstacle just scaling it? That's crazy.
I mean, it's become such a well-run machine. I mean, the producer of the show, her name is Betsy Chase. I mean, she's been doing it longer than I have. She's been with John longer than I have, and she's just, I don't know how she does it. She's managed to find a way to keep everyone on the same page, and it's just like every day could be a disaster.
Wow.
Wow. Like, you never know what these... Amazing. Well, any radio shows like right? that. No, anything I mean. Could happen, and right. you're like, oh, my God, somebody said this or did whatever. And or you could do something to, you know, piss off an affiliate.
Right.
And you really... you're So you're not just trying to keep the listeners happy. You're trying to keep all these affiliates... That,
you're trying to keep everything held in place.
Yeah. It's kind of like a lot of these guys, a lot of these program directors, I mean, they're, you know... I've been there. I've been one. Right. There's ego involved right. with anything. Any kind of management, there's going to be some ego. And PD's like, well, this is my station and this is my air that you're, you know. So you're dealing with that type of person that, you know, they don't want to feel slighted that they're in market 200.
Right.
Because you're giving more attention to New York.
Right.
You know. So every day is, just managing a near disaster.
This is an interesting question for me. You've done kind of a lot of different parts of radio too. You've seen different stations. You've been in different cities.
Yeah.
Is there a favorite?
Oh,
what
man.
What part of it or what city or what side of the microphone, I guess?
I've always loved, I'm an afternoon drive guy on the air. I've always loved Top 40. There's just an excitement to it. There's that feeling that, you know, people just got out of their job. They're probably not making nearly what they should make,
right?
But they're happy as hell that they're going home. It's Friday,
yeah.
And I've always loved that. The 80 station was, for me, that was, it's hard to describe. It was just more of a personal investment because it's like my people. I'm talking right. to my people. You know, there's no, I mean, yeah, there were some kids and there were some older people listening, but it's mostly your people that you probably went to high school with. So that was a favorite, but. Man, every aspect of radio is just, it's all great. Every single part of it. Even when, you know, my 80s station got flipped to Contemporary Christian, it could have been the worst time of my life. And they found a way to keep
make it enjoyable.
Yeah, they're like, well, okay, we're going to make you the assistant production director. And I'm like, that sounds horrible. But, you know, so there.
So you were pretty positive about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's something that you're in love with and suddenly you break up.
Right.
It's like you broke up with a girlfriend you dated for 3 years.
And you deal with that with radio more than any other format. Like it changes.
It's tough.
More than any other, changes more than film, TV.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And I think most people don't understand unless they're in radio that it's very big emotional investment, whether you mean for it to happen or not, but you become, you start to identify. You identify as that guy on that station. And when that's no longer there, you're like, who am I now? And that's really, I don't think a lot of people really deal with that, you know, in radio. I think I've seen a lot of people, they've struggled with depression after, you know, they're out of.
Yeah, because they're like alive when they're on the air and then it's.
And then they can't get another radio job. If you can jump across the street and get another gig, you're probably going to be okay. But I've seen a lot of guys that it takes them a while and they may take a weekend gig or whatever. And it's. I mean, it really messes with you.
And did you see also that, like, the different sides when you change stations? Like, there are politics, you know? It's like, how did you kind of maneuver and still keep the love for doing radio when it's throwing a lot of curveballs at you?
You have to learn.
Radio has thrown a lot of curveballs.
It has.
And you've seen city to city, format to format, music to music, or, you know, state to state, whatever it is. You have seen a lot of different sides of radio that most people don't.
Right. I if there's one thing I could tell younger people that are just getting started in radio, I would say you're going to have to get along with the salespeople, whether you want to or not. Because when you get into radio, you're like, oh, this is, you know, I'm an artist and this is what I do. And I'm going to create. We're going to go balls to the wall and break rules. You still have to sell. That station still has to make money to pay your salary. And you don't think about that when you're 20 years old.
Right.
You're like, I just want to party and I want to, you know, be on the air or whatever. So that's definitely something that I think most people don't get right away. And then I think, you know, with age, you start to get a little more mature and you're like, okay, I know where my paycheck's coming from now. And I know that if I want this promotion to work, I've got to talk to Chris in sales about getting a sponsor or whatever.
You know the game.
Yeah, it's playing the game. And that's with anything. If you're going to make a film or a TV show in this town, what's your budget? You know, where are you shooting this thing? Because if you're going to shoot this thing in some weird location, it's not financially viable, so it's not going to get made. So figure out a way to rewrite your show so that it takes place in.
Well, it sounds like you've really figured out how to pivot in this world of radio, because
I guess
you've got a gig where it's like it's sustaining everything that you're doing, but it's like you've been able to change formats, change cities. Still, like, I mean, you come here. I don't know when the last time you've just done an interview like this, and it's like fresh. You're fresh. You're just, you have that. You have that thing. It's like, not everybody comes here for an interview and knows how to do an interview.
I didn't even know why I was
like,
here.
There, I'm like, what are you talking about? There are times I'm like, man, who's doing the interview? Is it him or me? Because you just know, you know your way around, you know, doing radio. So my question is, what's next? How do you see either radio changing or you and radio changing?
Well, I it's funny because I really do believe radio has to figure out a way to embrace podcasting. I really feel like the two are going to come together at some point. And it may be tomorrow. It may be 5 years down the road. But radio has to figure out a way to stay relevant. And I think the biggest problem with radio is the car, because we don't go home and turn on our stereo. Right. Remember that you used to have your stereo, yeah, the huge speaker? Nobody has that anymore. Yeah. You get your iPhone, you put on the dock and whatever, or you ask Alexa to play a song. You don't have that at home anymore. So you're listening in the car. And if cars are changing to where everything is going to have Spotify, or it's going to have, you know, Bluetooth, you can play whatever you want, you don't necessarily need local radio. And that's scary. That scares me.
I think it's sad because, you know, like, no millennial will ever know the magic of calling into a radio station.
Oh, my God.
Waiting 2.5 hours.
Getting that busy signal. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
being
my
caller
God.
99.
Oh, my God. Yes. But getting your song played.
Yeah.
That was the most magical experience. Anybody in the 80s, yep, knows what I'm talking about. When you call station, you're like, I don't have this record. It's not out yet. I want to hear this song.
Yeah.
And you listen to a whole bunch of tunes that you don't even care about.
Yep.
But you're just glued to it because you're like, they took my request.
Yep.
I'm going to wait. And then 2 hours later, you hear your song. And it's just like that experience that, like, you earned it.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that. Now it's so accessible.
We had a station in St. Pierre's, Tampa. And, you know, the deal was they played, I think they called it the Top 5 at 9. So you would call all day and say, I want, you know, to hear the song, but like kids would call so they could introduce the song and they would tape you. And so you'd wait for 3 hours hoping you were the one that got to introduce the song, you know, and then you'd, wow, sit there with your cassette tape and try to record it. It's horrible. I mean,
that's amazing.
But kids today are, they don't know that.
No.
Just like they don't know what it's like to pick up a phone and hear a dial tone.
Right.
I mean, it's.
Or a busy signal.
Yeah. Like I'm with my kids at home and I'm showing them a record. I'm like, all right, this is how it picks up the music. And they're like looking at me like, what the hell is that?
What is this?
Just, what's this round thing? Yeah. Just put it on your phone. I'm like, no, it sounds better here. And they don't get that.
You know, I don't even think I mentioned your full name, but I'm going to do it now.
Right. I don't
at
have
the
one.
End of the interview. Jason Burns, where can people find you if they want you to do some voiceover work?
I'll be in the alley. Over here.
No, you do have a website.
I do.
Go ahead and rattle it off.
Not a whole lot there. It's just jasonburns.la, because I think jasonburns.com is a preacher in Florida. So.
Oh, so I was wondering. I was going to ask you that. I'm like, how did you get, why did you get the .la?
It's .la because the other one's
but
taken.
You know what? It makes sense. It makes sense. I didn't even know you could do that. So
yeah.
You're showing me new things in the internet.
I think .la was originally like a Louisiana or some weird lower level domain, and I don't know.
No, it's cool.
Yeah, I just grabbed it.
Yeah, you're like, that's mine.
That's it.
I'm doing it.
Just right jasonburns.la.
And you know, your wife, Stephanie Burns, Stephanie Story Burns, was the first person I ever met in first grade.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
And she's still talking to you.
And she's still talking to me.
I don't get it.
And you know what? Like, I was sandwiched between her and Queen Away, and I was like a brown kid. I had, you know, Queen on my left, and I had Stephanie on my right. And it was like, that was my introduction to culture, vibe, everything.
Yeah.
And it's like she brought you into my world, and man, I can't be thankful.
And now we're two brown dudes together.
That's right, dude. See? No, Jason, you gave me my first play on radio when you did your show.
So I gave you the bug.
So you have to come back and do another show with us, please.
Okay.
Eddie will be here for that one.
Yeah.
And one more time, where can people find you? Rattle off your website and spell it out because people are dumb.
Just Jason Burns, JasonBurns.la. That's it.
Awesome. Man, you've been a great, wonderful, wonderful interview. And
oh, we out of time?
Yeah.
I was going to do a song for you.
Well, play me a song.
No, I got to go.
Ah, see, that's cheap, man. That's a cheap shots. Well, you know what? Honestly, you've been a wonderful guest, and we're going to have you back.
So yeah, let's do it.
Don't move, okay?
Okay.
No Indianapolis, no. Keep you right,
I'm here. I love
right
LA.
Here.
I love it.
Dude, it's the best.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, on behalf of Eddie and myself and Jason himself as well, we'll see you guys here next week.